This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to Hey YA. From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a Book Riot podcast hosted by Erica Azafetti and me, Tirza Price. We are recording on May 6th. So hello, Erica.
Hi, Tirza. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. Excited to talk about the book. Excited to talk to you again. All the fun things. Even though it's like dreary over here, but.
Oh no.
Yeah, this conversation is my sunshine.
Yay. I love that idea. I love that YA conversation can bring a spot of brightness in your lives. Because I love YA. So I'm excited too, because we're going to be doing something a little bit different. And we're going to be talking about a specific book that we have both read. And that book is Queen of the Tiles by Hannah Alcoff. And it's going to be a spoilerly discussion. Is spoilerly a word? I just made that up.
It is. 10 points in Scrabble.
Well, thank you. Do not listen to us when we, give each other points for Scrabble because we don't have a Scrabble board ahead of us. But
I made it up.
It's great.
Yeah.
All right, before we get started, it is time for our every few years listener survey. So if you would be so kind, take a few minutes to come tell us about what kind of podcast content you like and what you'd like to see more of or less of from us. Just go to bookriot.com/listener survey to fill out the survey, and you'll be entered to win a $50 gift card to the indie bookstore of your choice. That's bookriot.com/listener survey, and there's also a link in the show notes. Thank you so much. So yeah, we're going to be discussing that book in depth because we realized that we just both like talking about the same stuff. So we're going to do that. But first, we are also going to bring you some news in the book world. So the piece of news that I'm excited about, because keep in mind we're recording on May 6th, is that the Netflix adaptation of Along for the Ride by Sarah Dessen is on Netflix today.
Nice.
And I'm very excited.
Nice.
Have you ever read Sarah Dessen, or did you read Along for the Ride?
I have not read it.
Okay.
I have not read Sarah Dessen either, in general.
Okay. Sarah Dessen, I have not read some of her latest work, but I think if you are a millennial YA reader at all, like, mm-hmm. you grew up with Sarah Dessen. Her first book came out in 97. She continues to publish a book every few years. She has a lot of books. And what's cool about her books, and I kind of think of her as like, you know, one of the gold standards in contemporary YA, is all of her books are usually set in and around this fictional beach town of Colby, North Carolina, or like Chapel Hill. So they have like a very specific like sense of setting. And because she sets a lot of her books in Colby, you see like little Easter eggs and nods to her other stories and other books kind of woven throughout her entire body of work. And that's really fun.
That's cute.
It is cute.
I will say, and I see Along for the Ride came out in 2009.
Yes.
So I definitely was not only reading YA, but I was like the target YA audience at that time. So it's interesting. I never really read like romance like that. I feel like I really, as far as YA was concerned, I read a lot of YA fantasy, which is interesting considering the conversation we had before we started recording. So I missed Miss Dessen, but I'm excited for her adaptation.
She's lovely. And I think, you know, so Along for the Ride, it's a story. And now I'm like, keep in mind that I'm going off of like my memory of when I read the book in 2009 and I haven't picked it up since. Mm-hmm. And also the trailer I've seen. But it's basically about this teenage girl named Auden, after the poet Auden, who if I recall correctly, is uncertain about her future. She lives with her mom, I think, in Chapel Hill, and her dad and her stepmom and their new baby live in Colby. And she goes and she lives with them in Colby for the summer. I think it's like the summer before college. And she's an insomniac. And so she kind of like discovers Colby's like night scene, which makes it sound like it's a club scene, but it's more like, you know, the people who kind of exist in this town after dark. So I think that the trailer looks really adorable. It's really exciting to see this come to the big small screen. Netflix, it feels like a big screen, even if it's not like a literal big screen.
That's so true. It does feel, that's a good description. I think with the streaming services becoming so popular, I think that whole like the small screen and big screen has kind of like changed a bit. So
yeah, it's blurred a little bit. So, but I'm really glad also that you brought up the fact that this book was published in 2009, mm-hmm. because you want to know what else was published in 2009 that is getting a adaptation this year is Jenny Han's To All the Boys I've Loved Before. You know, she of that fame. Yeah. Her very first YA novel, The Summer I Turned Pretty, is getting an adaptation that's releasing on Amazon Prime next month. And I'm also really excited for this one because I remember reading The Summer I Turned Pretty when it came out, and it has two sequels. So it's going to be an Amazon Prime TV show. And I think it's like 8 episodes. And I think that the TV show is a perfect format for this series because mm-hmm. it's the story of a teenage girl and her brother and mom. Every summer they spend it at her mom's best friend's lake house, and her mom's best friend, or no, I'm sorry, not lake house, it's a beach house, actually on the ocean. And her mom's best friend has two boys around her age, and she's always been in love with one of them. And this is like the summer that they notice that she's pretty and what happens. And it is like perfectly angsty with all the feels. So it's kind of, it definitely feels very much like a blast from the past to see these
yeah.
like rom-com, and not even comedies, but like romances, and you know, that I was reading when I was like 17. Now they're on the screen.
It's interesting that they're, oh, by the way, excellent segue, Tirza. That was perfect. Perfectly executed. You know what else is. but it's interesting. I mean, we had a whole episode on adaptations. It's interesting that they're choosing books from that long ago. And I mean, it's not that long ago in the grand scheme of things, but there are many YA books being released, you know, every year. Yeah. So it's interesting that they went for older books.
I wonder if it's because, and this is like total, you know, like speculation on my part, mm-hmm. but I wonder if it's because these books, first of all, were really popular when they came out.
Yeah.
And I have no idea like what their sales numbers or anything like that. I can't even remember if they hit the New York Times bestseller list, but suffice to say they were very popular. And they are written by authors who've continued to publish.
Right.
And whose books continue to be really popular. Right. And they've never, I think, really ever gone out of print. So I think, you know, we know, I don't know much about Hollywood, but I do know that Hollywood likes some buzz before they latch onto something.
Definitely.
And I think it's really telling that they, you know, pick up these stories that have really endured for over 10 years in the YA world and continue to have an audience. And I guess the perk about adapting books that are 13 years old is that, you know, all the 30-year-olds who read them when, you know, we were actually in high school are yeah. like, oh, that's now on, yeah. you know, Netflix. I'm going to watch it. And you're also getting a new audience in the teenagers today. So I felt very old saying that sentence, but that is so what sorry. I think is. No.
I'm so sorry.
No, I think that's probably what it is, though. So, but it's interesting. I'm excited. Give me all the fun, romantic YA adaptations. Yeah.
And it's interesting because, again, like I said, when I was that age, I was not reading romance much. I appreciated the romance I found in my fantasy, YA fantasy books. But yes. It'll be interesting to watch it now.
Exactly.
At my big age, as you said. So yes. That is exciting.
So yes, if you watch those or if you watch Along for the Ride and The Summer I Turned Pretty comes out next month, definitely let us know what you think because we're really excited.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to get into our conversation about Queen of the Tiles, which is completely different genre. It's a brand new book. But first, we're going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate, high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and, oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family, and lovers, and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so Queen of the Tiles. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I have to confess that I just, well, not just, but like, it took me a minute to get like the play on words with the title. It, like Queen of the Nile, Queen of the Tiles. Did you get that immediately? Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Cleopatra. Okay. I was like, oh, I just got it. Not like within this conversation, but when I understood, I was like, oh, I just got it. Like I had started reading the book. My grandmother, who is from Nashville, Tennessee, it's funny. She has all these like sayings and stuff, witticisms. when she would talk mess about someone, she'd be like, oh, call her Cleopatra because she's queen of denial. I thought I would share that. Okay. Anyway, how should we start? Do we want to recap things or do we just want to start off with what our general overall take?
I'll give like a little quick sort of pitch, especially in case there are people listening who are, you know, want to know more about the book and don't mind spoilers, in which case I do not understand your kind, but I will oblige you.
You're very foreign to me, but you're welcome here.
Yes. So Queen of the Tiles starts with sort of a prologue, and it's from the perspective, I mean, it's told in third person, but sort of kind of from the perspective of Trina, who is the reigning Queen of the Tiles in a competitive Scrabble circuit in Malaysia, and it's for teenagers. And, you know, you get a sense of her personality. She's very confident. She likes to kind of bait her competitors and wind them up. And she's playing against somebody who's very serious and very by the book. And it becomes clear throughout the course of their match that she's having a rough time, just like physically. You know, she's not feeling so hot. And then at a pivotal moment, she falls forward, face plants on the board, and she's dead to a completely shocked audience. Mm-hmm. And so that happens a year before the book really starts. And so it picks up again almost exactly a year later with Trina's best friend, Najwa, and she has been away from the competitive Scrabble circuit for an entire year. She's, you know, grieving her best friend's death. She's got a lot of anxiety that she's dealing with, and she decides to return for some closure, for some catharsis. And over the course of this weekend Scrabble tournament, which has very few parents, it's like the parents just kind of like drop them off and are like, hey, have fun, we'll see you on Sunday.
Survive.
Right? Which is wild to me, but anywho.
Yeah.
So over the course of the weekend, they start to notice that Trina's Instagram account, which has been dormant for a year since her death, all of a sudden it's posting new updates. And she's posting like these tile racks where, you know, with all these different letters. And if you put the letters together to words, it gives hints that suggest that perhaps she was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really kicks off the mystery of what really happened to Trina, who might have been responsible for her death, and what do they want next?
What do they want from us?
Yes.
Yes. Excellent summary. Excellent summary. Yeah. So, yeah, I really liked the, of course, like, I really liked the setting. I thought the setting was really cool. I don't read about many stories in Malaysia. I have no knowledge of Malaysia basically at all. So it was really cool seeing all there seemed to be a lot of different Asian ethnicities represented there. You have Indian, Chinese, Singaporean, you know, native Malaysian, of course. You have a mix of religions. Najwa wears a hijab, and they like pray and stuff like that. They talk about praying, and I thought that was really cool.
I agree. I feel like so much of YA that is set outside of the U.S., mm-hmm. and we even had like, so the YA market, especially in the United States, is hugely oversaturated. Which, right. I mean, I don't mean that as like a bad thing necessarily, because clearly there's a market for YA. People love it. Mm-hmm. A lot of books get published. But the sort of flip side of that is like you get a lot of very strong US-centric perspectives. So much to the point that like a couple of years ago when we were doing the Read Harder Challenge, we actually made it a challenge that you had to read a contemporary YA novel that was not set in the US, Canada, or UK, because those tend to be like the most popular settings.
Yeah.
And it was not impossible, but like a little bit difficult to find books with that perspective. And part of the challenge was that when you do find books that aren't set in those three countries, they tend to be books written by either Americans or immigrants who to the United States who, you know, are American, but then they are writing about like what it's like for American teenagers to go abroad and experience a different country. So you don't really get like, it's still like a very, you know, American sort of perspective.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that this book was clearly not an American perspective. It was, you know, even like the way that the teens talk and interact with each other.
I was going to say
It didn't quite feel like how I would recognize that like American teens talk. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean it in like an unrealistic way. It's just like their speech patterns and the words they use. It's different, which makes sense because you would think that teens in Malaysia would talk differently than teens in the U.S. So I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah. And I liked, speaking of language and how they spoke in the book, I like how, I guess, Malaysian, I didn't see a dictionary or anything, but there were some phrases throughout and they didn't really, like the author didn't give exact, like direct definitions for the phrases that were not English, but they did kind of say, like, using the context, you could kind of tell what was being said. And I also like, I know like some Spanish speakers, for instance, who are American, say they might say they speak like Spanglish, which is a mix of English and Spanish. And I feel like they were kind of in the book sometimes speaking like a mix of the other language and English, which I believe is Malaysian, mm-hmm. but I have not confirmed. I believe it is. And it was just, it was interesting too, because it's like you said, it was kind of like merging those two languages created like a different speech pattern. And it started to feel natural for me as someone who has no idea of the language, you know? So I thought that was a really cool addition.
I agree. I feel like there's been just a big sort of encouraging shift for writers. I mean, at least this is something that I see gets discussed in like the YA writers circles mm-hmm. and creative writing, where like you don't have to italicize words in a different language. And you don't also have to like give direct, you know, word for word translations. Like you can sometimes just drop it in there and, you know, the context clues allow you, if the reader's not going to stop and like look up the translation, you know, you're not losing anything because you get enough context that you're like, oh, that's kind of what that means. But like, also, let's be real, everybody has their phones. You can do a quick Google Translate search if you really want to know.
Yeah.
But it does feel a little bit more just, I guess, you know, realistic to certain mm-hmm. characters, realistic to, you know, the lived experiences of bilingual folks. And I'm mm-hmm. I'm not bilingual, so I'm just kind of going out on a limb here to assume. But yeah, it was really neat to see that. And I appreciate that we get, like I said, you know, and this is not a book that's, you know, set in the Western European world. It's just really cool to see, okay, this is how a bunch of Asian teens who get together for a Scrabble tournament live. And that's really interesting. So.
Yeah. And the food too, it talks about, without over explaining, similar to what I was saying about overly explaining the translations and stuff and makes it feel more natural, like you were just saying. The food and stuff, you know, a lot of some things that I've never heard of, they were spoken about like they were, you know, things that they normally eat. So that's another way of like basically building this world. For me, as someone who's never been to Malaysia, I'm having this world of Malaysian teens built around me and I'm kind of just like immersed in it. And it was really cool to see, looked up some of the food and stuff. And I was like, okay, this is what they eat. That's cool. Funnily enough, because you were just talking about how, you know, this is not from an American perspective, but there was that American restaurant they went to.
Yes.
And that was hilarious. And it's funny because I recently saw a video or something, or maybe like a BuzzFeed article where it was talking about like American restaurants in other countries or American food or whatever. And then I read that and I was like, yeah, so people do that. That's so funny.
Yeah, that was a really funny scene, especially I think if you're American and reading this and you have a good sense of humor.
Yes.
Reading about, like what is a stereotypical American restaurant experience? And I look at that and I'm like, yeah, I don't feel like that is my real experience going out to eat. But like I can see where the stereotypes come from. And it's really funny.
Yeah, it was funny. It was like a diner.
It was like a 1950s diner.
I was about to say, yeah, that's that whole, and I'm like, that is a common idea of Americana stuff. And they had these overly sweet, super huge milkshakes with no straw and burgers.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, definitely don't eat that. But yeah, it is funny to see how we're interpreted other places.
Yes. Let's talk about the Scrabble aspect, because obviously I think that was like the big hook for me when I first heard about this book, because...
Definitely for me as well.
Yeah. Huge word nerd here. Do you play Scrabble a lot?
Tirza, I never play Scrabble ever.
Okay, I'm the same way.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I love words. I love reading about the words. Like... I know we were talking about writing some favorite words or whatever, and I stopped at a few because I was like, oh, that's enough. I love like the etymology of them and, you know, all that good stuff. But for me, I think this is a personal thing. Just like with chess, I have a hard time kind of visualizing things. So I have a hard time kind of visualizing words that were longer than like four letters or something. It's hard for me. I got ADHD. It's difficult.
Yeah. I love Scrabble. Like some of my fondest memories as a kid was whenever I would go over to my grandma's house, she had like, you know, a Scrabble board from, I don't even know when Scrabble was invented, but it was a total retro, genuinely old Scrabble board, you know, Scrabble board with all the tiles. And we would play and I loved it so much and she enjoyed playing with me. And then like there was never, like I've never had anybody in my life that like wants to play Scrabble with me. Yeah. Like that sounds a little pathetic, but like my partner does not like playing word games, which is funny because I turned them on to Wordle.
Yeah.
But I don't even own a Scrabble board. I would love to have a Scrabble board and have somebody like to play with me frequently. So I was like, I'm going to live out all my Scrabble fantasies while reading this book. And then I was reading this book and I was like, damn, these teens are like so far ahead of me. Like, whoa.
Okay. I was like, I haven't played Scrabble in a minute. I used to play Scrabble more so at school. And I remember liking it. And then I was like, reading about Najwa loving Scrabble and everyone else being really passionate about it, like before they started playing, I was like, ooh, I want to play Scrabble again. Like, I haven't played that in a while, even though I'm like kind of low-key bad with visualizing, like I said. I was like, ooh. And then they started playing the words. I was like, hold up a second. I'm like, Syzygy, I don't know her. You know what I mean? Like, who is that?
I know.
I'm like, okay. So I'm like, I guess I am bad at Scrabble, but I still wanted to like play it. I would totally play Scrabble with you. I would definitely do that.
I would play Scrabble with you too. Oh my gosh. Okay. So we're going to have like a meetup where we play Scrabble. It will be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I feel the same way. Like when I play Scrabble, I don't get as inventive as they are. Like,
yeah.
The words at my disposal are like the words that I would use in an average day.
Yeah.
And I'm not using syzygy in an average day. Yeah. I didn't even know what that word was until...
Exactly.
I read it in this book.
I had to write it down. I was like, I like that. There's a lot of Z's and Y's and it's just interesting looking.
I'm glad you were the first person to pronounce that because I looked at that and I was like, no.
I was listening to the audiobook. That's why it's funny. I was like driving because I like to listen to audiobooks and read print when I can. And so that's what I did with this book. And I was like, I was driving somewhere and I was like, oh, I got to write that down. And how I heard it, because I heard it first through the audiobook, how I heard it is not how I thought it was spelled at all. I was like, so when I was looking through the book to find it, I was like, I know it was in this chapter. And I was like, oh, that's it? That's not what that's not what I thought it was. Not at all.
Yes. So if you are also just listening and you have not laid eyes on this word, it is spelled S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Y's.
It's a lot. Interesting and cursive.
And it means a conjunction or opposition, especially of the moon with the sun, which I like that. That's cool.
I like that too. It's very like celestial. Yeah. I like it. I was like, ooh, I like this.
I learned some good words in this book because every chapter starts out with a word and it's Scrabble points and part of speech and then a definition. And one of my favorite ones was mumpsimus.
I think I remember that.
Yes. It's an opinion held obstinately, in which case I have many mumpsimuses about lots of things. I don't know if that's actually the plural version of
like
the word.
Something you need like a vaccine against. I know, just like right? She's got measles, mumps, and mumpsimus. Like,
oh my gosh! But words—they're so much fun. And I just love that we read an entire book about teens about words. Who were really passionate about words.
Yeah.
Like that just brings happiness to my heart.
I loved it.
Yeah. It was a really fun read from that perspective. Like I so enjoyed the atmosphere, mm-hmm. the setting. There's a lot of really different interesting characters, like you said, from just like all over the place. Mm-hmm. And everybody has really interesting backgrounds. And then you get like all the word nerd stuff in there. And I think one thing that I was really impressed by too was you would think that like, I mean, Scrabble is such a visual thing.
Yeah.
And so this is a Scrabble tournament where like they're just kind of sitting around playing Scrabble. And you're like, how do you make that exciting? But the author, the way she wrote the Scrabble matches, really, it was very exciting.
That's so true. She wrote them like it was like watching figure skating or a ballerina or someone. It was like how she described like the board and I gracefully maneuver the board and people would get up after games and be like, the board is beautiful.
Right? And I was like, yes, yes it is.
Yes it is. Cause the words, it's so beautiful.
It made me wonder if like the author while she was writing this book, like had a Scrabble board right next to her and was like playing things, you know, to just kind of visualize it. Because that's what I would have to do if I were definitely writing about Scrabble.
Yeah. And I don't even know that I could even get to, I don't know how. I do love, I really love the idea. And I'm like, I'm grown, but can I do this? Like, I want to go away for a weekend and be around other word nerds or just general, whatever kind of nerds and just be really super immersed in our nerdy thing.
Yes.
And just, you know, it sounded like a nice getaway apart from the death.
Yeah. So if we could do all that without the death and suspicion, that would be great.
Thank you so much. Exactly. We're like, no death, no suspicion. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, okay. I think we should talk then about the mystery aspect. But before we do that, we do have to break for another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by National Geographic Books. So take a second, think to yourself, what is one of the like weirdest, but kind of interesting, intriguing, intelligent animals that you know of? If you, like me, think of an octopus, then Secrets of the Octopus by Cy Montgomery is the book for you. It is a beautifully illustrated book that explores the underwater world of the octopus, a creature that resembles an alien life form, but whose behavior has earned it a reputation as one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. This journey into the world of the octopus reveals how large their brains are. They occupy their whole body, not just their heads. they can adjust their genetic makeup to respond to the demands of the environment. So with this book, you can see how the octopus can change shape and color to camouflage themselves more effectively than any other species. They are cool AF. So learn about all of this and more in Secrets of the Octopus. And thanks again to National Geographic Books for sponsoring this episode.
All right, so the mystery aspect, which of course is like the other part that was really appealing to me because I love mysteries, as yeah. I think has been well established.
Yes, same.
So I'm not even sure how to approach this, but like, what did you think of the mystery, I guess?
Okay. So yes, like as you said before, a few minutes before in your summary, Trina kind of just drops dead, basically. During a Scrabble match with this guy, Josh. And after she does, like, after she collapses on the board or whatever, Josh is like, oh, did I win? And so he's set up as this, like, terrible person. Okay, so I had asked you this, because I was like, you know, sometimes when I listen to audiobooks, sometimes I might forget a detail, even if I think that I got everything, sometimes some things still slip through the cracks. Yeah. And I was like, did I miss the autopsy that they did? Because people were talking about how Trina Lowe, she was healthy, she was young, you know, didn't have any pre-existing conditions, but she just dropped dead during this Scrabble tournament. So
yeah,
I was like, did I miss the autopsy? Because I'm like, okay, you have these teens trying to, you know, amateur sleuth it out or whatever, which is cool.
Right.
I love a good mystery. But I'm like, so wait, where are the adults and the authorities? Where are they?
Yeah. And I think, like, okay, first of all, I love the setup and I love the idea of like, yeah, the Queen of the Tiles dies. And then like a year later, they're like, oh, is it actually murder? And then they have to investigate. Awesome. But I was with you.
Yeah.
Like my major quibble with this setup was that was very much like not clear. And it was kind of like glazed over.
Yeah.
And because I had similar, like, it's funny because you put in our planning document, like this question. And I was like, no, you didn't miss it because I missed it too. And so then I went back and I was like rereading. And so, yeah, my one quibble with this book is that, yeah, like, you know that Trina just drops dead and she's young and healthy. And, like, everybody just kind of accepts that, like, oh, she just drops dead. Like, it happens sometimes. And it's like, no.
Not really,
no,
sis.
Not really.
No.
Like, yeah. So there is not much, like, questioning of her death in, like, the first half of the book, even when Najwa's, like, reflecting on the fallout of her death.
Yeah.
And, like, her limited interactions with Trina's parents after the fact. And that actually was really bothering me because I love mysteries, but, like, I want to know all the information that is at my disposal when we're going into the setup. And it felt a little weird to me that Najwa was her best friend and was gutted by this and was like, how could this happen? But she didn't, like, know, like, was there an autopsy? And I do think, I mean, unless I'm vastly misunderstanding how, like, sudden deaths might work in this particular, you know, area, like, I do think that they probably would have been like, no, let's get an autopsy because healthy people don't just die.
Yeah, I would think that they being the authorities or whomever, coroner's office, they would sooner give her the parents too. I feel like they would sooner give Trina have an autopsy on her, you know, body before someone who was like 40, even 40 is not old or elder, whatever. But someone
but
older.
An older person.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, why did this girl die? Okay, good. So I was like, did I just really, like, really skim over this? I, like, speaking of our, like, little planning document, I wrote the question down and Tirza said, LOL, nope.
Yes. Like, no, you didn't miss anything. I also had that question.
I'm like, okay, perfect. And that a lot hinges on that.
Yes. No, I was, what you said was correct. And I was going to say, there is a throwaway line in like this last 100 pages or so when Najwa's like reflecting on the case. And she does say something to the effect of like, well, the authorities decided that it was it wasn't a suspicious death.
Oh.
And, like, that's all she really says about it. But again, okay. I was like, well, why not? Because not only, do I think is it suspicious that somebody were to just drop dead, especially if they were healthy, and then like not do any follow up. But it, her death was like a very dramatic thing, and it happened like while everybody was kind of focusing in on this very dramatic match. So like all the circumstances didn't really align for me to like believe that nobody would be like, you should do an autopsy, even just for peace of mind for the parents. However, like what you said, if they had done an autopsy, then a lot of the mystery, like the wind would have been taken out of the sails, because at the beginning of the book, everybody just assumes that it was an accident. And the, you know, reappearance of her Instagram account is what like makes them think that like maybe it wasn't an accident.
Yeah.
And I also think like if there had been an autopsy back then, you know, they would have figured it all out. It wouldn't have been like a year later that this whole mystery kicks off. So I do understand like why that played out. So I think if you read this book, that aspect requires just like a little bit of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Which I was happy to suspend, because I was like, let's see what happens. And that was kind of fun.
So then it becomes more so like, and I'll just add one more piece to that autopsy thing puzzle. Her Trina, that is, and a few other kids there they came from like privileged backgrounds. And it seemed like their parents had money. And I think her mother was like a high power attorney or something like that, if I recall correctly, Trina's mother. And so just another point on that, like, I'm like, you know, to be real, you know, if you're rich, you're privileged, you can have things, you know, you can pay for things more. So I would just think that even with that, they would have like an autopsy and more formal evidence. But as you said, so if you still want to read the book, you know, you do have to suspend belief for that. So in doing that, it starts to become more so like, okay, who is messaging people on Instagram from her account? So then it's like, the mystery kind of shifts to that. Like, okay, so who is this?
Yes, totally. And that was interesting. And in that aspect, like, I really enjoyed the mystery setup, because I feel like the author did such a good job of like introducing us to like this wide cast of characters that Najwa, like some of them she knows really well because she sees them on the Scrabble tournament circuit. Some of them she doesn't know quite as well, but like she kind of, she identifies them by like their tells for when they're playing. And she like recognizes like, this is, you know, so-and-so, he's from, you know, this place. And you know, he's kind of a good Scrabble player, but he's not so great at these other things. And so you kind of get like the whole setup of all the people. And then once she realizes that, you know, Trina was probably murdered, then she's like, oh, everybody's a suspect. And then you start to investigate. And that kind of felt a little bit like, you know, the classic sort of Agatha mystery, Agatha Christie mystery setup that I really enjoy. Because much of the book is her going around sort of sussing out people's secrets and figuring out where exactly they were at what time and building this timeline, which was really, really interesting. And it was kind of a fun little twist.
Definitely. I will say, too, another point that it doesn't really have to do with the mystery, but more so like the words and stuff. I liked how Najwa, the main character, I like how she linked words that came up with, as far as like Scrabble, like when she was playing Scrabble or just in conversation, she would link it to something that she was experiencing at the moment or something that was pertinent to the moment. And I really like that, because it kind of just like is like how memory works. And it's also kind of like how I remember word meanings and stuff like that. And I just thought that was like cool. Maybe because I do it. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of like, that reminds me of this. And like, you know, I thought that was a cute aspect. I just wanted to say that from before. I meant to say that earlier when we were talking about the words, but I did really like that. And you're right. I like how the author chose to explain people's personalities and stuff. It didn't feel too heavy-handed, I guess, because Najwa was talking about tells, which are like a psychological thing, a behavioral thing. So, and she was trying to suss out her potential opponents in the Scrabble tournament. And that ended up being handy for this, you know, murder investigation. So I did like that as well.
Yeah, it was fun. It was, it felt very natural to mm-hmm. her character that, like, that's what she would notice, because she does, because she's such a competitive player, she does notice people's tells. So I always appreciate it when, especially when you have, like, an amateur sleuth, which most YA mysteries feature amateur sleuths, because most YA mysteries don't, you know, star teenagers who are actually, like, police officers or private investigators because they're teens. You know, you want to, like, make sure that, you know, the character's investigating a mystery from their own unique perspective. And I thought that that was done really well.
Yeah. Now let's talk about some spicy things.
All right.
Some little spice, some little saison, you know. Little problematic things. What did you think of Mark?
Oh, Mark. At first I was just like, okay, I'm not sure what to make of him, because Najwa was kind of keeping her distance from him.
Yeah.
And she, you know, was reluctant to kind of, like, engage with him, in part because, you know, she felt like he wasn't properly mourning her best friend. But then the more you got to know him, I was like, oh, she's keeping away from him because she secretly likes him, and, like, it's painful.
Oh, let me interject real quick. I'm sorry to cut you up. Mark was Trina's boyfriend when she died.
Yes.
And Mark, it's kind of hinted at, or, well, it's confirmed, kind of, I think, that Mark cheated on his ex-girlfriend Pootery with Trina. And then Trina and Mark started dating. And since the year has passed, since Trina's death, Mark has been, like, dating all these other, like, a string of other girls.
Yes.
So that's why Najwa is like, oh, he doesn't care.
Yeah. So I kind of thought, like, okay, he can't just be a player. Like, there's got to be more to him than that. And then I actually started to really like him, especially, and I felt more sympathetic once I learned that, like, Najwa had this secret crush on him. But Trina, who is, like, the more bubbly and outgoing character who always gets what she wants, of course, she got to him first.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit, I was completely and utterly soured and turned off by his character, because there's a flashback where he sees Trina hanging out with Najwa, and she's wearing, like, super short shorts and a really tiny top, and he totally slut shames her. And I was like, don't like this guy. And there's never a moment where he kind of comes back from that. It's just, like, something that happens and then it's never addressed again. So, like, you know, maybe some teenagers would just like, oh, he was just really upset. But, like, me as an adult, I'm like, bad name, stay away from him.
One thing I noticed about that flashback was the slut shaming, and it was possessive. He was basically like, you're my girl. You're not supposed to, like, advertise to other people, more or less.
Yeah, like, don't put your wares
on display.
On display.
Yeah.
And but to Trina's credit, she shuts him down and is like, I'm not, like, your possession. I can do whatever the heck I want. And I appreciated that display, but
yeah, but he shoved her also. He, like, put his hands on her, and I was like, okay. And then it was like, there was this character, Yasmin, who was kind of like, third wheel may not be the correct term because it's friendships, but Trina and Najwa were friends for super long, and then Yasmin kind of joined them, and she always felt like she was on the outside or whatever. So Yasmin, during the investigation, Yasmin is telling Najwa, like, warning Najwa about Mark. She's like, be careful with him. And then Mark does have, in the present time, Mark does have, like, an outburst. And then there's that flashback with him where he slut shames Trina and he shoves her. And my issue with that, apart from the obvious, is that, like, Najwa still likes him after, and she's like, oh, like, the next page, she's like, oh, he's passionate and emotional. I'm like, nah, girl, he's abusive. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that was a hard thing for me to kind of swallow, too, because I don't think that that would have been, like, a deal breaker for me. And I can understand if for Najwa, she wasn't thinking that clearly, or she didn't quite see or understand that yet. Mm-hmm. But I also don't feel like that was ever sort of appropriately addressed, like,
exactly,
within the whole text and context, because the book ends, and I'm not, you know, and we did say this was going to be a spoiler discussion.
Yes.
You know, he's not responsible for her death, but he kind of, like, they kind of end on, like, good terms. Yeah. And obviously, like, Najwa and Mark don't get together, but she's kind of like, oh, you know, he's a good guy. And I'm like, no, No, he's not. I mean, he's not a villain, but...
He's like, yeah, he calls himself, I think, a rich douchebag at one point.
Yeah.
He refers to himself as that. But my thing is, like, didn't he at the end when, it, like, there are the three of them left, the three being Najwa Puttri and Mark Puttri, again, for those who haven't read, was who Mark cheated on to when he started dating Trina. And wasn't Puttri said, basically, Mark asked Puttri to be his girlfriend again?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So Mark and Puttri are back together, and Puttri and Najwa are tentatively friends.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing for Najwa because she doesn't have any friends, mm-hmm. and Puttri seems like she might be a decent friend, but I just feel like the whole thing with Mark, I really wanted him to like have this moment of growth where he realizes like that his behavior, his past behavior was not good, and that he commits to changing and being better. And I feel like the author didn't give us that, and because the author didn't give us that, I struggled with his character and yeah. with like the implications of people just kind of like letting his abusive behavior pass.
And I feel like this is another, and this might be just, I don't know, me, well, what would I say? My own personal things that I'm putting on to this book. But I know I'm being vague. I feel like people let Mark get away with things because he's handsome. And I mm-hmm. felt like, especially at the beginning of the book, and at points throughout, I honestly felt like it was overly superficial. Like, I felt like... As in, as far as what people look like, I kind of felt like it was a little like that at times. But I also realized that, you know, some people are superficial. It might just be a me thing. Like, I'm not like that super into people's looks. So it could definitely just be a me thing. But I do feel like the case with Mark, all he would have to do is like smile because he's so handsome. And then all would be forgiven. Yeah, fall over, like fall down the stairs and stuff, just because he's oh my God, so handsome. And so yeah. like it kind of at the end, he was like, you know, I need to work on myself. Smile, tee hee. And she's like, ugh, yeah. well, I guess, ugh, Mark. You know what I mean? I'm just like,
yeah,
gag.
Yeah, that wasn't my favorite part either. I have to admit. So yeah, I'm reassuring to hear that you felt the same way.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so the question that I want to ask, because I found this to be a fun question to ask, is mm-hmm. did you suspect the killer?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I suspected the killer from the beginning.
Yes.
Did you?
I did suspect the killer, although I tried to keep an open mind, and as yeah, I go along, I'm like, this person maybe, but I did kind of keep coming back to this one person just because of, like, their overall behavior, and I mean, sometimes I think people think, like, if you can guess the ending or guess the killer of a murder mystery, then therefore it's not a successful murder mystery, and I actually disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think you can suspect or you can guess, but, like, for me... The definition of a successful murder mystery is not whether or not it's a surprise, but whether or not it all, like, the story, like, works out or surprises yeah. me in some way. So there were plenty, even though I suspected the killer, there were plenty of twists and steps along the way that kept me going, ooh, but what about this? But what yeah. about that? And so I couldn't piece together the whole story. If I could piece together the entire story, like, you know, before the end, then, like, that's not great. But that was not the case in this book. And I actually did enjoy piecing it all together with Najwa and following. And then when it's revealed that the person was who I thought it was, I was like, yes, I was right.
Yeah. I mean, so since we are being super spoilery, when did you realize that it was her?
Well, I suspected that Yasmin was responsible when Najwa would have like the little sort of ruminations on her backstory, and she talked about how Yasmin and Trina used to be best friends before Trina moved schools and then became friends with Najwa, and I thought jealousy.
Yep.
Because Yasmin gets involved with Scrabble because Trina's involved with Scrabble. Yep. And I was like, I bet she was jealous. I'm not sure why or how she killed her, but I bet she's responsible.
Yep. And I pretty much the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, there's at one point when Trina is, like, attacked And she says that she didn't see who attacked her, and she's not sure what happened. And, oh, I must have just tripped, but maybe I was attacked. I was like, no, she's faking it.
She's lying because...
trying to throw off suspicion.
Oh, yeah, when Yasmin was, when she, like, fell, threw herself down the stairs or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was obvious. I do feel, and I'm with you, like, I don't mind guessing who did it, who done it. Because I feel, too, sometimes, you don't want things to become, like, overly convoluted just because, like, the author is trying to be like, oh, I bet you thought it was him and it was her and stuff like that. Like, I still want, like, a well-written mystery. Exactly. And stuff. So I don't mind if I'm able to guess it. It just has to, you know, all come together in the end. But, I mean, the Josh thing, too, I predicted that, like, how that turned out.
Yeah.
And again, that's not a bad thing. But Yasmin, yes. I think I was like, oh, she definitely did it. Of course, like you said, I was also open-minded. But when Naja was reminiscing about how kind of like obsessed Yasmin became with Trina, how she would always be around, I was like, okay, mm-hmm. she did it. And her throwing herself down the stairs, it's kind of like, I was like, nah, she's guilty. It was her.
Yeah.
What do you think of her? So she didn't actually... kill Trina, though.
She definitely set it up. So this is the part that's kind of like a, you know, twisty. What actually has happened is that multiple people gave Trina substances that basically they all interacted within her system in a fatal way and caused her death, which is why I think if there had been an autopsy, they would have realized, like, wow, Trina has these three very distinct substances in her system that cause total organ failure. And then the mystery would have been like, okay, now who gave her what? And you would know that, like, the week after the death instead of, like, a year later, all this coming to light.
Yeah, that was the thing. That just didn't make sense.
But yeah, Yasmin, you know, wanted to, yeah, her motivations to me were a little bit murky in the way the book resolved, because she wanted Trina to kind of come back to her, and then she also wanted to punish Najwa for stealing her best friend. So that's partly why she kind of brings us all back. And there's a lot of, like, poisoning and people having upset stomachs and, you know, so-and-so's medication is missing. So it's a lot to keep track of. But, yeah. So that was also a very interesting aspect to that mystery, because you do kind of have to, like, follow all these different threads.
Yeah. Did it say why Yasmin, like, kind of all of a sudden came back? Because it's like she becomes obsessed with Trina, but it was like, and they were friends when they were kids, but I'm like, where were you all this time?
I can't remember exactly, except maybe she was just trying to get back into Yasmin's life, and, you know, I don't know. I do remember one line was like, Trina inspired intensity in people, which I think is an interesting line.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it is, you know, and of course Yasmin's only responsible for some of the missteps that lead to Trina's death and some of, you know, the poisonings, because other people are, you know, unbeknownst to them being like, here, take this pill for headaches, or here, I just want you to have an upset stomach so you lose this next match, and it all kind of comes together. Yeah. I would hate to be the police officer in charge of, like, untangling this mess, because it's like, how do you decide who is responsible for what, and how do you, you know, mete out punishment? And of course, the book doesn't really touch on that, but yeah, it was very twisty.
Yeah, it was twisty. I didn't know that you could, well, I guess too much of anything is a bad thing, but vitamin C as a poison was different. Yes. It's not like a poison, but, like, you know.
If you ingest very large amounts of it, it can cause an upset stomach. So,
yeah.
And then St. John's wort is another thing that's being dispensed amongst people, which on its own is a natural, you know, supplement that can help reduce anxiety. But if you mix it with, like, other drugs and medication, it can be very bad news. So, yeah, there was a lot going on with that.
There's a lot going on. Yes.
So overall, what did you think? Yes. Would recommend?
I would recommend, but not for the mystery. aspect, because I feel like, as we've said, it wasn't, like, I feel like it could have been fleshed out a bit better.
Yeah.
I would recommend for the wordiness, the word nerdiness of it all, that was fun. I would recommend it for teenagers in Malaysia, just a different setting. I thought that was really cool. And some of the in-between comments, like, the, you know, conversations and stuff were fun.
Yeah.
Or funny. Like, they have pop culture references, like, you know, like, I guess American pop culture references. Those are the only ones I would get. I would understand. That was cute. But for the mystery, I don't know. I felt like it fell a little flat for me. So it depends on, you know, as long as you go into the book knowing what you're going to get.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you. I think there is a great book. There's a lot of really amazing things to like about it. And despite my quibbles about, like, the setup of the mystery and kind of how it was all resolved in Mark as a character, I did enjoy reading it. Like, I read it very quickly. Like, I flew mm-hmm. through it. So
it was fun.
It was a really fun book. So I'm so glad that we got to read this together and chat about it.
Yeah, it was cool. It was fun. And the cover is very cute. Very pretty cover. Yeah. Just going to say. Just putting that out there.
It's a great cover. So, yeah. Well, this has been really fun. And I'm sure we could keep chatting much longer about mm-hmm. all the books that we love. But unfortunately, we're running out of time. So thank you so much for tuning in. And feel free to leave us feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leaving us a review lets us know how we're doing and it helps others to find us. You can also always email us at heyya@bookriot.com for, you know, book requests, book, you know, recommendations, suggestions, feedback, whatever. Feel free to reach out. And don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and all things bookish. Thanks again to today's sponsors for helping make the show possible. And thanks so much to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I hang out at @tearsofprice. And how about you, Erica?
I am at @Erica_EZE_ on Twitter.
Awesome. So we will be back again in 2 weeks when we're going to be chatting nonfiction graphic novel memoirs, which will be fun. All right. Until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.